If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sip is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts, who have been with us since the very beginning, and it's where we all learned how to make podcasts, radio, and video. If you're interested in a creative degree in games, sound, film, journalism, or maybe you'd like to mix and match, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. This is the fortnightly show about indie games from around Australia and the world. My name is Mitch, and on the show tonight are my co-hosts Sarah and Gianni. How are you guys?
I'm pretty good.
So our guest tonight is Brigitta Renner from Mojikan Studios in Indonesia. Thank you for joining us, Renner.
Yes. Hey. Hello.
And Renner is one of the developers behind She and the Lightbearer, and we'll be talking to her later on in the show about that game. But before we get to that, what are we taking a look at, Sarah?
So tonight we'll be taking a look at multiplayer games and the servers that connect the many people that play them, because sadly, dedicated servers are not always an option for everyone.
Great. Let's get started.
Hey there, if you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So, Fortnite players in the Middle East are sick and tired of the lack of dedicated servers by Epic Games' Juggernaut Battle Royale game in their region. So much so that there's currently a social media protest led by a popular YouTuber called Allah DVLZ Station Ibrahim gaining serious traction at the moment.
So I think, like, being in Australia, we've all suffered under the, like, high levels of ping and just inability to play some games. And it's gotten better over the years, but we still suffer from it here occasionally, even when I play Overwatch. And it's just one of the things that we've had to compromise on as players that aren't really in the EU or America.
Looking into this, I did a bit of digging onto the forums just to try and see exactly what players meant by high ping. Because to some people, they can say, oh, my ping's 50. This is ridiculous. And I'm just like, I've played on 90 to 100 ping before. Don't complain. Like, that's playable for a PC gamer. But some of these people were dealing with ping of upwards 250 and above in the Middle Eastern region. And for a game like Fortnite, if you've ever played any kind of a shooter, either an FPS or a third-person shooter, ping of 250 and above is literally unplayable. And I mean that very seriously. Like, the hit registration flies out the window. So players have been complaining that, you know, people that have good ping get a complete edge above them, and they're absolutely right. It just means that, like, you're immediately put on, like, you're down the ladder immediately just because of your ping, which is really frustrating.
Probably should have addressed this earlier in before you made that statement, Sarah. But what exactly is ping?
So I am not an expert on this, but basically ping and server connection is how fast it takes for your computer to contact the main server of a dedicated server. So, for example, if I'm playing Fortnite and I shoot my gun at another player, and the higher the ping, the longer it takes for the server to have that information sent from my computer to the server to say, I've shot my gun and it's hit this player. So the higher your ping, the more out of touch they kind of are. That's not an expert explanation. I'm not the best at it, but basically when it comes to online games, servers, a dedicated server can really help players, because a dedicated server can better, like, basically stabilize the server for all players. So for example, if two players are just trying to directly connect to each other and it's not a dedicated server connection, it's peer-to-peer, With the example of with For Honor, for example, which is a public game by Ubisoft, originally it was peer-to-peer connection, and players were having a lot of issues, for example, where in the middle of a game, one player's made a host. So the player with the best connections made a host. If that host suddenly disconnects, the entire game is disrupted. So, for example, if that were to happen in Fortnite and one person was made host, like, the game would just die. But basically, with the current Fortnite server situation, when players in the Middle East are trying to connect to, like, players in Europe on the European servers, their connection is taking a hell of a lot longer to travel. And to so if someone in the Middle East shoots their gun in Fortnite, the amount of time that it's going to take for them, like, their computer to send that information to Europe is absurdly long. So it means there's this big disconnection between, you know, when players actually shoot guns, which results in stuff like direct lag. Rubber banding is a common thing where you're running along in Fortnite and suddenly you jump backwards and, you know, you've moved back like 10 meters when you thought you'd ran 10 meters. So that's kind of, I'm not an expert, but that's like the best I could explain it, I guess.
I think one of the big things to talk about this is that there's always an assumption, I guess, and this we see this in Australia, but and Rena, I'm really interested in what the perspective is like for you as well, is that it seems that if you aren't in the US or the EU, that you just have to kind of, you're forgotten about, and you're not thinking, they don't think about what your individual perspective might be. And it's not just from the perspective of, you know, Fortnite, but I remember one of the examples we have is quite often there'll be a day one patch where a game will come out, there'll be a 50 gig download, and that is very difficult for even people in Australia and a lot of people around the world. It just makes it very difficult.
That's true.
Now, do you have any examples like that playing games in Indonesia where this situation it seems like they've kind of forgotten that not everyone has the world's best internet connection or something like that?
In Indonesia, it's like playing multiplayer game, you have to, what is it? It's expected to have the lag in it because we didn't have the best internet connection in here. And if you want to be pro player, you have to invest more in internet connection, more like that. And as for the day one patch, my own, what is it? How to say it? I was downloading, I think it's Dragon Age Inquisition. They have, I don't know, 30 gigabyte, if I remember, and I have to wait for around 1 week in my house to download it.
Wow.
So that's kind of, you can see the situation in here, something like that.
See that,
and that's... with a game like that, I imagine there's a lot of spoilers as well, so you have to stay off the internet, not looking at any Dragon Age.
Yeah.
So it's not even on a multiplayer level. It's not even on a multiplayer level because that kind of download time is not unheard of here in Australia as well.
Okay. As in Indonesia, my home internet connection is kind of the low tier one, so I have to be very patient with it. And ironically, today my office internet connection got down because the cable is cut by some project. And so I have to move to the prayer room where we have another internet connection.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can imagine how to prepare something like this in here.
We've got there's a comment here from Warren over on Facebook. Warren says, maybe we should just learn, adapt, and overcome. So in Battlefield 4, as an example, he goes, I choose the tank because going as an assault class, I'd get killed all the time. So I change the way that I play the game in order to compensate for bad connections. And Moody Zander actually also says that I have over 300 ping on Smite. It's playable without lag, but I notice there's always a split-second delay on my attacks. Not as much as a stuttering lag, but the attack delay is one of the issues with having a very high ping or a bad connection speed. So,
one thing I've just been told is that, reminded, ping is measured in milliseconds. And Fortnite does not run at all on peer-to-peer. Fortnite fully runs on servers. So to have a whole region of people in multiple countries having to connect to another region decently far away from them, for example, as far as I'm aware, everyone in the Middle Eastern region has to connect to the European servers. To me, that just seems absolutely absurd, because when you're dealing with 450 milliseconds of ping difference to people that are playing on 100 and less, that's a huge discrepancy in your player base. And I'm not sure if, like, if anyone else has kind of directly experienced that. Like, I've, and a lot of my friends, we've played on American servers due to necessity. And at that point, like, there's not much that you can do to adapt when none of your hits are registering, when none of what you're doing is actually connecting, and you're just at a full disadvantage constantly. So it's very frustrating. But I'm looking into the Fortnite situation. Epic Games has responded, and they did say that they are currently working with their providers. But the biggest issue is that apparently none of their current multiple cloud providers have the infrastructure for Fortnite servers completely globally. Is this an issue that you've had in Indonesia, Rina? Like, do you find that there's just not enough infrastructure locally as well in your own country to have online games running strongly?
We have some, but I'm not sure myself. Is there any, what is it, infrastructure about it? But we can pay more for the good internet connection, if that answers it.
Yeah, no, definitely paying more for better internet can help. Yeah, but I think a lot of the biggest problem lies in how many servers there are closer to you and how good that server infrastructure is as well. Because, like, there could be a server two doors down from me, but if the routing of the server is bad, I could still have terrible ping. So that also kind of plays into it, unfortunately.
So if you just... Rina?
Oh, that's okay. No. I think about the server down or something like that, it's either we didn't know about it because we have internet connection bad, or we didn't have any problem with it, actually. That one way to put it. Then, Mitch.
Yeah, so I think, like, at the end of the day, it just seems like the infrastructure just needs to be put in place. It's all about, it's a balance between the capabilities of the company. I think Epic is absolutely capable of providing servers in the Middle East. I think that they're rolling in money at the moment, and it's all about kind of the balance between infrastructure and the company's kind of ability to provide that, and the resources of that particular game developer or publisher or just whoever's providing the games as a service. Okay, so I think we'll just move on to our next topic now, and it's the interview with Rina. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to Pixel Sift, or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
Now, Rina is joining us from Indonesia. She is from Mojikan Studios, and she is one of the developers behind She and the Lightbearer. Hi, Rina. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And so for those of us who don't really know much about your game, can you give us, like, what would you tell people who are brand new to the idea of your game?
So She and the Lightbearer is more like a point-and-click game with fairy tale vibe in it. And in this game, we play as the little firefly who explore the forest to search for the being called Mother.
And what were some of the inspirations behind it? I noticed that it's got a very strong artistic style.
Okay.
How did you design that game?
As for the story, I start with the Hinduism folklore. It's small, if you can search it, it's Prithvi Mata and Dyauspita, or it's easily translated as Ibu Pertiwi or Mother Earth. We have this saying in Indonesia that called Ibu Pertiwi for our country, but we personally didn't really know how this law, how the storyline of this law of Ibu Pertiwi, something like that. And as for the visual exploration I do is more like I take heavily inspiration from the movie, if you know Song of the Sea, and some Disney movie, something like that. And some of the pattern, and I love to draw plants in it. And some of the pattern is like from Indonesian plants, mm-hmm. Indonesian flora, and other fabric pattern, something like that. So I try to combine all this so that not just us from Indonesia who knows what kind of pattern it is, so that people internationally, people in this globe can get the same value of artistically in it, something like that.
The characters themselves, do they incorporate any sort of Indonesian designs as well? Is it part of that that you've worked into the characters?
As for the characters, some are from Indonesian as well. It's more like we have this Rafflesia arnoldi that grow in Indonesia. And there are this...
That's the one that kind of looks like the Pokemon Vile one, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the other one is there this three characters that are it is wise and something like that. It's from Weeping Tree, we say in Indonesia pohon beringin, and as in Indonesia pohon beringin is more like the how to say it,
mystical.
The mystical, the wise figure of it, something like that. So it's not all like, I try to put little Indonesian in this brand new fairy tale, something like that.
Fantastic. When did you originally start working on She and the Lightbringer? Or like Bearer, sorry.
Bearer. I think it's 3 years ago, 2015, I guess. So it's more like 3-4 years ago.
And the game comes out very soon, comes out next week.
Yes.
How does it feel after something you've worked on for so many years to have it at this point where you can release it?
Terrified. Of course, and it's more like finally, it's like all this time I can say much about it to anyone because of this is a story-driven game that you can spoil anything about it. And then to release it to the world is more like all this time I was mute and now I can talk to them, something like that.
Now, what? Who is this game for? Who would you like to play your game?
I think for people who love nature first, and for people who love fairy tale, of course, because I must say, I always look for more fairy tale vibe in this game or movie or something like that, and this game can be played by children as well because we got some moral story in it that can be implemented in their daily life.
Have you put a lot of moral kind of, you know, stories or moral lessons into the game like in traditional fairy tales, or is it just kind of like one big moral lesson or are there multiple?
If you put it that way, somehow I make each character has its strong and weakness, and we can take a moral lesson from each of the character. So it's like we have this one storyline of moral lesson from it. But if you look closely, we can learn from each character we met on the forest.
That's fantastic.
Renna, as an illustrator,
yes.
As an illustrator, when did you decide that you wanted to make games instead of just illustrating?
At first, I was working on I think it's way back. let me try to tell it. It's way back when I was still a college student. Me and some of my friend making Mojiken Studio. So I was learning in a visual communication design. And while I was in a college, I tried to make some illustration project and something like that. Then we choose to make Mojiken, and then that was when we try to make a game.
Excellent. So, and I understand your company Mojiken, that was started as an illustration company as well, and then turned to game development. What was it like as a company to move to game development, not just on a personal level?
I don't know, but our company is more like at first we already want to make a game at first, but we still didn't know how to start. So we start from what we can do most. It is do illustrating, and so we're starting as illustration as well. But then after that, we have this turning point when we try to learn to make game for ourselves. So the artists, the all artists of Mojiken Studio is like, okay, now we learn about programming, something like that.
And what was it like trying to find the confidence to release a game of your own creation?
I'm not confident or something like that. It's more like because we are an artist at first, it's like we need to share our work in people. So somehow it's more like we need to do that rather than how to find confidence in that.
Awesome. And so moving on to that, I'm curious about the games industry in Indonesia. Like from your experience, how has that been for you?
Actually, we have friendly community, of course. And it's easy to talk to the senior in this industry as well. So it's like it's easy to ask one another how do we try to how do we try to upgrading ourselves. But as you can see, Indonesia is like a more country of so many islands. So we only have, we only can talk in social media. So it's hard to make, it's hard to make, to meet face to face in one event, something like that. So when we have event in this Java Island, the other friend in other island is more like we are separated, and to buy the plane ticket to the Java Island is not so affordable for us.
Yeah, it's,
cool. We just have a couple of questions from the Twitch chat, if that's all right.
Okay.
Marcus Plays Stuff would like to know, does Mojiken have any other projects going on at the moment behind the scenes?
We have, let me ask first. Summit? Gak apa-apa, Diana.
Kenapa?
But other project.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have this one project called A Space for the Unbound. It's more like we try to put everyday life of high school student in Indonesia. So it's slice of life things game. And then we already released our game called Ultra Space Battle Crawl. And my previous game. It's more like my personal game that already been released in by the name of Mojigen is Raven Monologue. I think that's all.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing whatever you guys produce next because She and the Lightbearer looks beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you can find out more about She and the Lightbearer by just searching it up in Google. It's on Steam, and it's scheduled to be released on the 17th of January. And you can find out more about Mojigen's work on Facebook. You guys have Twitter, and Renna, you're also on your personal Twitter as well, don't you? You have one of those as well.
Yes, of course. My Twitter is CrystalNyam. You can just search about it, and I'm also have Instagram, so we can talk more about art in there, and will be happy to talk with you guys.
Excellent. Yeah, both of those are really worth checking out. They're like the visual style of the game is really illustrated in like your Instagram and your Twitter. And thank you very much for joining us, Renna. That was really awesome.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
No worries. And thank you for joining us for another episode of Pixel Sift. And thank you very much for spending time with us, Renna. Thank you for telling us about She and the Lightbearer. This episode was hosted by myself, Gianni, and Sarah. And it was produced by Scott Quigg and Fiona Bartholomeus. And our executive producer is Gianni DiGiovanni. And thank you very much for Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting Pixel Sift through all 112 episodes. And if you'd like to learn more about the great creative degree, you can search murdoch.edu.au/arts. And as always, we'll be sticking all the links to Renna's work and her Twitter and her Instagram, and as well as Mojigen's social media and She and the Lightbearer on the bottom of this episode. At www.pixelsiv.com.au. And the absolute best thing you can do is head to pixelsiv.com.au/discord if you want to keep up with everything we're doing, because we post everything there first, and you can chat to us about games and articles and other things that you've been doing. So that's pixelsiv.com.au/discord. And
you can also con Mitch into playing some Fortnite with you if you're really lucky.
Yeah, occasionally that'll happen, maybe. So Sarah, if people want to go to listen to other episodes, where should they go?
So you can go to our website to stream episodes. You can subscribe as a podcast either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Pocket Casts, or whatever podcast player you like, because we're on all of them now. And also, while you're on Apple Podcasts, if you could give us a review and a star rating, that would really help other people find our show. Or even better, load up an episode of Pixel Sift on your friend's phone if you think they'd love it.
Yeah, thanks. Just go on their phone and just put the subscribe button. Do it.
Just take it. Just subscribe to us for them. They'll love it. Trust me.
So we're live every Thursday, and our next episode is on the 24th of January, but next week at this time you can join us for Pixel Sift Plays, as we'll play some indie games that we featured on the podcast and more. Thank you very much for joining us, Renna, and thank you very much for joining me, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right, we'll catch you later.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.